Well, the Supreme Court handed down several decisions today, though not the three most prominent cases still pending, all out of Texas. We're waiting for those decisions on abortion, affirmative action, and immigration. But what did the court do today? Dahlia Lithwick is there. She covers the Supreme Court for Slate and ducked into an office to speak to us by Skype. Dahlia, one of today's opinions has to do with whether a person can be prosecuted for the same crime by both the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico and the mainland U.S. What did the court say?
This was just a basic question about, for purposes of double jeopardy, the idea that you can't be prosecuted twice for the same crime, whether Puerto Rico is a sovereign. Mm-hmm. And Puerto Rico was claiming, we are a sovereign and we can prosecute these gun dealers, even though the federal government already has a plea bargain in a separate trial. And the Supreme Court resoundingly said, by a 6-2 margin, nope, Puerto Rico, you are not a sovereign for purposes of double jeopardy. And Elena Kagan wrote the opinion in which she more or less said, look, the ultimate source of Puerto Rico's power as Puerto Rico is the U.S. government. And so, no, it's not a sovereign. And needless to say, Sonia Sotomayor, who is of Puerto Rican descent, she and Stephen Breyer were the two dissenters.
Well, and this is only going to add, I'm imagining, to Puerto Rico's call to please let us be sovereign and be a state.
That's exactly right. And Justice Breyer in dissent makes that very point.
Yeah. Well, the court also ruled today that a Pennsylvania Supreme Court judge should have recused himself from the case of a death row inmate that he had once prosecuted as a district attorney. Tell us more about this.
Right. This is a case called Williams versus Pennsylvania. And isn't it funny, Robin, that we're having a big case about judicial bias and judicial recusal in the very week that Donald Trump has made this kind of a federal case? In this particular case, we have an appeal from a death row prisoner who was literally committed his crime in 1984. And all these years later, what he's saying is, hey, one of the judges on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court who wouldn't set aside my death penalty served as the head of the prosecutor's office back when my case was tried, and he should have recused himself when he sat on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And by a 5-3 margin, with Justice Anthony Kennedy lining up with the court's liberal wing, the court agreed with him. They set aside his death penalty and said, you know what, that this judge in Pennsylvania needed to step aside because he did have a dog in this fight. And as Justice Kennedy says, you can't fairly be a judge in your own case, and deciding to seek the death penalty is a significant prosecutorial action, which means you cannot be objective at trial.
Well, and that last part is what might differentiate it from people who just don't like the way a judge is ruling because his parents might be Mexican. I'm bringing it back to Donald Trump. I mean, what do you think the wider implications are? It seems very clear in this Supreme Court decision that it was a very clear conflict of interest.
I think your point is exactly right, Robin, that when you try to get a judge to step aside, you have to show that there's an actual conflict of interest. And the idea that you don't like the heritage of a judge who's hearing a case that actually has nothing to do with race can't possibly rise to the level of a conflict of interest. And that when you say, hey, I just think this judge is going to hate me because of things I said that might make his parents mad, that's just not in the realm of meaningful conflict, meaningful bias.
Okay. So the three biggies that we're waiting for, there's a challenge to President Obama's executive action on immigration. There's also the Texas abortion case, which is being described by many as possibly the most important abortion case in 25 years. Just take a second there. Remind us what's at stake there.
In the Texas case, I mean, I think it's fair to say it certainly would have been the most important case since 1992, except, of course, now the court is down a man. And so all of the cases that are pending that would have been blockbusters have the potential to be 4-4 ties. The two issues in the case have to do with, one, rejiggering abortion facilities as ambulatory surgical centers so that they, even though they're not providing surgical abortions, are set up as surgical entities, and requiring doctors to have admitting privileges in local hospitals. And the takeaway is that since that law was passed, we know that in Texas, we went from 40 clinics to 19 clinics, And if the law is allowed to stand, there would be 10 clinics left to serve all of Texas. So the stakes are extremely high. And certainly, I think it's fair to say that unless this comes down as a 4-4 tie, it will be consequential not just in Texas, but in every single state around the country in terms of giving guidance on how much abortion can be regulated.
Yeah. And then there's the affirmative action case, Fisher v. University of Texas. Back before the court for a second time, the case of Abigail Fisher, the white student who challenged UT's consideration of race as a factor in the admissions process when she was denied admission. One of the major cases still ahead. Dahlia Lithwick covers the Supreme Court for Slate and stepped out today to talk to us about today's decisions. Dahlia, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Robin.